Hi, I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Em, and you're listening to the Shortbox Showcase.
Episode 58, The Bestsellers List.
So we've talked about comics we like and comics we read, but we haven't actually talked that much about the comics that other people like, because as you will learn in this episode, and might already know from some of our other episodes where we've talked about our pull list.
There's a little bit of a disconnect between us and, like, normal people who buy comics.
Yeah, Diamond Distributing doesn't like us.
Yeah, we'll talk about how similar our tastes are.
And mostly aren't.
The average mainstream comic book readers. If there is such a thing as an average comic book reader, I know our listeners in particular, well above average.
Nice.
But first, a little feedback. And we have two awesome new iTunes reviews.
First from Gorilla Scribe, Professor Allen and his crew.
Okay, let's stop. Let's acknowledge that this may well be the best feedback we've ever gotten, crew. You should probably start from the beginning again.
Professor Allen and his crew have put together a gem of a comics-focused podcast that bounces across eras, publishers, titles, and characters. Some are books that I read in the 70s and 80s, others are ones I passed over at the local comic shop. Regardless, each episode has me recalling the smell of old books and savoring the joy of recollecting their stories and adventures. It is a definite and permanent addition to my podcast rotation.
Now, with his emphasis on 70s and 80s, I think Gorilla Scribe may have been a fan. I don't want to put any pressure on my crew. But there may be some Uncovering the Bronze Age fandom in there too, just saying, so. We also heard from our buddy, Nathaniel Wayne, from the Council of Geeks, which is taking YouTube by storm. What a great network. Everything is well worth listening to. While things like The Quarter Bin and Comics Reading Journal might be the most frequent, I think it's probably the Shortbox Showcase that I enjoy the most, where the father and daughter duo, hey, that's us!
Yeah!
Team up to do some pretty great dives into some pretty awesome topics. Well worth subscribing to. Aww. Thanks for those kind words, guys, and for all 10 stars.
Yes! Catching up on some episodes in the network feed was our buddy, Podcasting's Michael Bailey. And he had some thoughts about our Jack Kirby 100th birthday special. M and the Professor, coming to NBC this fall.
I like the way he thinks.
I'm going back through the back episodes, since that's how I roll. Mm-hmm. But I recently finished your Jack Kirby 100th birthday special, and since you asked for feedback, I have decided to send some. One thing I won't be doing in this feedback is disagreeing with your selections. I may not agree with everything that you said, but choices are choices, and we're both talking about tastes and favorites, so there's no argument. I like your takes on the characters you talked about, and it was a really fun conversation. Which brings me to my top five. I chose five to keep this email from getting too out of hand, and it's still long. Kirby is one of those creators that I learned to love. It was in the last 10 years that I finally got the man and his work.
Yeah.
I also realized that, on a very real level, Jack Kirby's work is in my comic book DNA. From a very young age, I was loving his characters, and as I started reading comics as a going concern, his creations were an integral part of my favorite books. Kirby is comics, at least to my mind. That said, here are my selections. Number five, Dan the Terrible Turpin. I'm a big fan of tough guys with a heart of gold. Turpin was part of the Special Crimes Unit in the Superman books I read growing up, and over those years of reading, I became a pretty big fan of the guy. He was tough, he was loyal, he would take on Kalibak and not think twice. Going back and rereading his initial appearances has been a joy. I guess I just like a guy who will straight up punch you in the face if he thinks you're out of line.
Well,
and that is a theme that will continue throughout the rest of this.
We're learning a little bit about Podcasting's Michael Bailey. Number four, The Demon. Back in 2011, I found the first issue of the first Demon series for cheap. That's what I like to hear, and picked it up. A week or so later, I read it, and it blew my freaking mind! It was so good, and so crazy, and a character I'd always liked become one I think is essential to the universe in general. I like Etrigan. I like Jason Blood. I like everything about him.
Number three, Guardian and the Newsboy Legion. Superman Annual No. 2 was a formative book for me for a number of reasons, but none more than my introduction to Guardian, Big Words, Gabby, Flipper, Tommy, and Scrapper. They were different. They were funny. Guardian was so awesome with his shield and the cloning and all that. And then I read the Kirby issues of Jimmy, and as much as I respect M's opinions, we are on different sides of the planet on this one. Those books are so crazy, I would be willing to have a knife fight over them. Almost. I even like the Golden Age issues. My fandom runs that deep. See, this is how you know that Michael Bailey is a good egg. Because if either of us were less good eggs, this conversation would have ended in a Denny's parking lot at 2 in the morning.
Number 2. The New Gods. The Christmas of 1985 is when 9-year-old Mike got his first batch of superpowers figures.
And a whole universe was born.
Among those were Darkseid, Kalibak, and Desaad. I was familiar with them already thanks to the final iteration of the Super Friends, but here were the toys in my hands. Because of this, and because the New Gods were introduced with a connection to Superman, these characters are part of the fabric of my comic book life. I love them. I'm finally reading the original run, and I'm proud that they are part of the comics I'm keeping during the great Bailey purge of comics of 2018. And I like Bart a lot.
Yeah, of course you do, Michael. All the cool people do.
And after 4 DC, we get to the Marvel.
Number 1, the Hulk. My 2 favorite Marvel characters are Cap and the Hulk. I love Cap, and he's in my top 10, but not the top 5. I really am a DC guy at heart. But the Hulk is different. He's part of the big 3 of my early kid years, along with Batman and Superman. I cannot express how important that live-action show was to me. And no, I am not taking this as my time to chastise Alan for not being into it. I'm not into it either. As was the 1982 animated show, and the reruns of the Gantry Lawrence shorts from the 60s. I was all about the Hulk, and years later, I fell in love with the comics. I flirted with the Hulk from time to time. I bought $2.93 off the spinner rack of Triangle Pharmacy and literally read the book until I had Tom staple it back together. But the first issue, as drawn by Jack and written by Stan, is a masterpiece. It is in my top 5 Silver Age books and one of the best comics ever. Ever.
Ever.
It is a thing of beauty and a joy forever. Man, oh man, I love the Hulk. Like all of us, I suppose, I owe a debt to Jack Kirby. He was the king, and we will never see his like again. Great show as always. Take care.
Thank you, Podcasting's Michael Bailey. On episode 57, we answered a question about noir comic recommendations for our buddy Isaac in Michigan and Sir Martin of Grey from the blog Too Dangerous for a Girl also had some things to say on the topic. Great bunch of noir recommendations for Isaac. I'd also say grab Don McGregor and Gene Colan's 2 Nathaniel Dusk miniseries from the 80s. There are a fair few issues floating around cheap on eBay. McGregor isn't at his wordiest, and Colan's art reproduced directly from the pencils is gorgeous. And with Nathaniel Dusk appearing in the Doomsday Clock mini, prices will likely shoot up. Yes, I love Nathaniel Dusk, both of those 2 miniseries, and they all are on the list of things I'd like to get bound if we ever get back around to having comic books bound again. Those series are on the short list. And in terms of the cheap prices, yes, some of those are even in the quarter bin database.
This is not a plug. But the core of that episode was about Black Lightning. And Nathaniel Wayne from Council of Geeks wanted to talk to us about that. Was instantly excited to hear the two of you talk about this show. Granted, there's still time for this to go off the cliff, but so far, I'm really enjoying it. Though oddly enough, it took me probably 3 episodes to figure out why. Not that I was seeing a ton of problems, but it seemed like it was just pretty competently doing stuff I'd seen done elsewhere. Which, let's be fair, given the current state of certain television shows on the CW network, that is actually a kind of high bar. I just couldn't figure out what this show had that others didn't. And three episodes in, it hit me. This show, better than any other superhero show and quite possibly any other TV show that I can think of, is the story of a community that feels like a real community. And I don't just mean in the sense of the broad umbrella of the Black community, I mean a sense of place. Yes, with a majority Black population. Where so many shows fail on this measure is for all the talk of cities or schools or even neighborhoods, we're always shown the same dozen people every week.
This is a really good point. I think he's really onto something here.
Anybody who isn't part of the recurring cast is basically just an extra, or, in the case of most superhero shows, a villain or victim of the week. But that's not the case here. Every character who so much as speaks a single line feels like they have a life in this place. The doorman who holds the door in episode one encapsulates this in a nutshell when he just looks at Black Lightning and says, "My man." And I feel like you completely get him in an instant. This was solidified when characters I expected to be recurring, both righteous and villainous, started dying, and there were new characters, just as vibrant and lived in, ready to step up. Nobody is there just to fill a slot, even though it would be easy for that to be the case. There's a pastor in the third episode who could have so easily been an unreasonable paragon or a straw man, depending on the point of the episode, but he's neither. He's a character, a human being. And this show is entirely populated by humans. This show gives us a living, breathing, vibrant, troubled community. Daredevil can prattle on and on every other episode about my city, and Luke Cage can talk about the impact of this neighborhood. But neither of them came close to actually establishing either in the way that Black Lightning has done in just a few episodes.
I think that's a great point. I think some of the casting choices, but then the way that they're written, as he said, I've now watched all 13 episodes, and that does continue, the coming in and out of characters. There are characters who you think are gone for various reasons, including the fact that they
might be dead.
You know, seem to be dead. Doesn't necessarily stop them from returning. No spoilers. I'm just saying it's a comic book show, and things happen like that. You know, but you see, for example, the police chief, who was the neighbor. You see him interacting with Jefferson as a neighbor. You see him interacting with other cops. And you see him, you know, holding press conferences as the police chief. You know, he's a well-rounded character. And it's not just those major characters. I think, as Nathaniel says, a lot of the bit players, they just, as he said, seem lived in. And I liked his idea of it really does feel like a real community. I think it nailed that one.
Yeah, I think I got halfway through episode four. Five was the last place that I paused. So I am not as far in as you are, but it's, I think, episode three, where they have essentially a town hall meeting where anyone who wants to come shows up at the school auditorium and they all have a talk. And that's just like one of the greatest scenes ever, because you have all of these one and two line characters, but you totally get them. And I really feel a lot of it's the writing. But I feel a lot of it comes to the acting, that every single person, it feels like, is invested in their character. And we talked about this a lot with Lala being removed from the plot as quickly as he was. And some people were upset about that because it's like, well, but he felt like he was a real character. Well, that was the point.
Good, exactly.
That was the point. That even if you know that your character is only going to be around for a season or six episodes or three episodes, the actors really feel committed to bringing reality to the characters, and it comes through phenomenally in the show.
Nathaniel continues that it's not a perfect show, and I could nitpick, trust me. But for once, I really don't want to.
Okay. Okay.
The show isn't breaking ground in concept or even plot points, but it's being executed with a polish and intelligence. In a sense of completeness that I hope does not fade as the season continues. M brought up the IMDb user score, and I'm going to let you both in on a little secret. If you want to know how people really think about a show, don't look at the score for the show. Look at the scores for individual episodes. Because people who either decided ahead of time that something is dumb or amazing and deserves a certain score tend to only rate the show entry. But the people who actually watch the thing, the fans, they rate the episodes. and that's where you get a better picture. So in the case of Black Lightning, the score for the series is at 6.5 as of the time of me writing this email. However, the scores of the first five episodes are 7.9, 7.7, 7.7, 7.4, and 8.3, respectively. This is an especially important extra step to take to gauge reaction when it comes to anything even slightly politically charged. Geekily yours, Nathaniel Wayne. We learned something today.
We did.
Good point.
I always thought that the IMDb score was just an episode average. And then I would be weirded out by the fact that the numbers didn't match up.
Makes sense. It makes sense.
That is great. Thank you, Nathaniel. We also heard from Sean Ross of the Pulp to Pixel podcast, Professor Allen, and Dr. M.
Well,
you.
Have you been?
I like you.
Wait a minute.
Great episode. Like you, I'm really excited about the potential of Black Lightning and by the daring choices they are making to directly take in issues usually avoided in mainstream TV. Also like you, I am somewhat afraid that it will become CW'd and suddenly have 20-something vampires and lots of Canadian extras.
You know, I'm not here to judge, but I do think the standard Canadian CW extras, they might stand out a little bit on Black Lightning.
Maybe just a bit. Maybe just a bit. It is so nice, though, to have a show about African-American characters that isn't focused on a singular view of life or struggle. In a way, the Pierce family is the Huxtable family for a new generation, removed, of course, from the context of Bill Cosby himself. They are educated, loving, healthy, and happy. Sure, there is drama to make the show interesting, but the core is about a family. I hope it never loses that focus. Right now, it's a good show, and it has the chance to be important. Thanks, Sean.
Again, good insights. And our great buddy Darren Sutherland of the Rad Adventures Network wrote in about both of the topics on that episode. Hi, Em and Professor Allen. A busy work schedule has put me behind on lots of things, including podcasts.
I understand.
But I finally had a chance for some catch-up today on Shortbox Showcase and had a great time listening. Ruth and I have been enjoying Black Lightning as well. It's a refreshing show, and I was happy to hear the two of you are enjoying it too. I was surprised to hear the two of you have dropped off of iZombie. Ruth and I are still enjoying it and currently watching the early part of the third season. We'll likely catch up on the show by the end of the current fourth season.
Now,
the
to be fair,
may have been a miscommunication, because
yes.
I'm still watching that.
And I still very much like, enjoy, approve of. It's just that my TV consumption has dropped by about 90%.
You're one of them millennial cord cutters, right?
Yeah. So
you will binge it in a few years on Netflix over a long weekend.
Sometime when I'm really feeling in the mood, or when I have, you know, some time off from work or whatever, I will watch it. And I actually recently had a patron come into the library, and they had picked up iZombie Season 1, and I saw that they were checking it out, and I went, oh, you are in for a treat. I am so excited for what you are going to watch. And she was like, really? Like, I just heard it has, like, zombies, and there's, like, crime fighting. I don't really know anything that it's about. And I was like, okay, well, let me tell you. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. Gave her a basic rundown of the premise and said, and what's great about it is that every season is basically a different genre.
That's
so the first one is police procedural, and then you get, like, high drama, and then, like, political commentary. Mm-hmm. You get everything, and it's wonderful, and it doesn't take itself too seriously, but it's also great. Just enjoy. Enjoy. Go for it. I'm still out here on the pro-iZombie.
On the bandwagon.
On the bandwagon, and I specifically tell her to avoid Santa Clarita diet at all costs.
Good recommendations all the way around, I would say. Darren continues, I heard you recommend Girl Genius for steampunk fans. It's always a top recommendation for us, too. We've been fans of Phil Folio since first seeing his illustrations for the Myth Adventures books by Robert Asprin. Thanks for the great episode, and have a terrific evening, Darren.
And relating to the ongoing topic, the one that will never end. Reigning listener of the year, Dr. Ange, posted a picture of an issue of The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones and asked, where would you file this?
J for Jones, I for Indy, P for Professor.
Okay, so...
Okay, it would be under F for further.
I need context. If it is a continuation of a series called Indiana Jones...
I don't believe so. I believe it was put out in between a couple of the movies as The Further Adventures of Indiana Jones.
Okay, because I looked at this, and this is a question of parentheticals. You're welcome, Tom Panarese. So, if it's the further parentheses, Adventures of Indiana Jones, it needs to go in A.
Oh.
If it's the further adventures of parentheses, Indiana Jones, it needs to go in I. If it is, in fact, neither of these, F for further.
I would put it under F for further and film adaptations.
Ooh.
See, it goes in both.
I like the way you think.
Or M for Marvel. That's why this is such a hard question
to
answer.
Double file everything.
Multiple copies, Dr. Ange. Is that so hard? A little cross-reference, perhaps? A little card that has the multiple... I'm throwing out options.
Is this the time to tell everyone that I bought boards so I could cross-reference my comic books?
You're such a geek. What is your problem?
I know.
Awesome.
Thanks to everybody on social media who gave us shout-outs, many of them we've already mentioned, but also the great Kansan Gregorujo, Clinton of the Coffee and Comics podcast, Chris Willett, Mike Carlisle, Jared West, Matt Moore, Vera Wild, The Logbox Crusade, Mr. Dystopia, I like your vibe, dude, Chris from Bat Books for Beginners, Noel Thingvall of the Thundar Road podcast, and Old School Ross, as opposed to New School Ross.
Hey, we don't judge. Let's take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the current best-selling comic books. You know, the ones we're not reading.
I do all my work email from my phone in the supply closet. There's snacks in there. There's a sink.
Have you ever had one of those days at work?
So I am doing work in the closet, but I'm hiding, and there's a lock, and no one knows I'm in there except the cleaning guy who found me, but he will never tell.
Of course you have. We've all had them.
But what do you do when that one day at work becomes 2 days, or three, or four, or even your entire week?
Well, that's what we're here for. I'm Liz Dolan.
And I'm Matt Ritter.
From Wondery, Safe for Work is the show that makes work better for you.
We take your questions and calls, give you personal advice from our years of experience all over the working world, and help you make your way from Monday to Friday with less stress, more confidence, and maybe even a little more fun.
Plus, every episode, we talk with business leaders and experts to learn what to do and what not to do to find happiness at your 9-to-5.
People talk about how we spend a third of our lives asleep in bed. But you know what, Liz? We spend even more time with our coworkers than we do our family and friends.
Right, but that doesn't stop workplaces from being really intense and complicated. When you have a question about something going on at work, who do you ask? Your friends?
They won't know the full picture.
Your coworkers?
They won't be objective.
Your boss?
God, no. What?
Well, I guess that just leaves us, Matt.
We're not going to promise to make you richer, a master of the universe, or even more beautiful. But our hope is we'll make you happier and more fulfilled at work.
No matter how big or small your question might be, we are always here to help.
I just started a job, and they have official meetings where the agenda includes things like root beer float time or pillow fights. I was actually on an agenda last week.
Debuting March 19th, Safe for Work, Job Stress, Life Relief. New episodes every week. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing this right now.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Liz and Matt. I appreciate it.
And we're back.
And we're looking at the comic book's bestsellers list for the month of March 2018. That's the last month for which the information is available as of this recording.
But we all know what the number one book for April is.
Yeah, it was. As I was putting this together, I thought the nice thing about March is that it is a normal month. It's not going to be blown away by Action 1000. And there really isn't any other real weirdness at the top of the chart. So I think we actually picked a pretty good month. We've kicked around this episode for a while. I think we picked a pretty good month to do it because it's... sort of a normal ish.
It's a good month. Cross section.
Yes. We're using the sales charts from Comicron.com, and we're just sort of going to look at what our fellow comic fans are buying the
trends like these.
And so just a little big picture, because I happen to be a business professor.
Oh, you love those statistics.
We'll point out that in the top 10 for this month, 5 DCs, 4 Marvels, and an Image. Pretty well spread there. The top 10 also has 3 number ones. Given the state of comic books, also not surprising. Now in the next 10, 11 through 20, that is, Marvel has a lot more. 7 Marvels and only 2 DCs there. So thought we'd start by looking at the top 10, sort of in a little more detail than as we go down the list, to sort of see what jumps out at us. In a technical sense, we have to say, these are not retail sales.
Right, these are the sales Diamond distribution
from
side.
Diamond to LCSs. And though we don't know how many of these will end up in quarter bins, but we can hope lots.
I mean,
that is actually one of the advantages of the direct market and mm-hmm. the distribution method, the pre-ordering and all of that, is the comic stores tend to be much better at ordering. There is much less waste. If one of my little hobbies, when I see a book from the 70s, if it has that little half page about the annual sales information that they had to provide for, had to do with postal regulations and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. that every magazine. There's one I was looking at recently. It was either Superman or Action. It was one of the big ones. And it had something like, on average, for the past 12 months, something in the neighborhood of 600,000 copies printed, 250,000 copies sold. They keep both of that piece of information. That's the thing about the newsstand. You are just sending out, and who knows what the sell-through. I mean, the sell-through rate was often less than half.
Yeah.
And so I think the advantage for the publishers is that the sell-through rate is a much higher. So not all of these are going to sell, but I think the unsold is much less than yes. it used to be, I think, as we can complain and quibble about aspects of the direct market and comic shops. Mm-hmm.
And the likelihood of underbuying materials mm-hmm. that you personally are interested. So we will just make this our annual plug. Find an LCS, make friends with them, and start a pull list.
And because Rob Lance is getting ready to start typing this email,
mm-hmm.
pay for the stuff in your pull box.
Yes.
Pick it up and pay for it. Don't let it sit there. So if we start at the top 2 sellers are from DC, and they're based on events or arcs that, even though we are DC people, I'm starting to think we're fringy. We're on the fringes of DC-ness.
I mean, I'm a Vertigo person.
There
like,
you go.
I always
there,
have
there you
been.
Go. There so you go.
That, I mean, I take no blame nor credit in this entire thing. So
we're only, I mean, I'm only tangentially following these ones, but the number 1 seller, Dark Knight's Metal, number 6, and number 2, Doomsday Clock, number 4. Any thoughts about either of those?
I literally did not know what Dark Knight Metal was until 4 minutes ago at the ad break when you told me what the premise was. And I went, oh, that sounds much less dumb than I thought it was.
Well, the Dark Knight is Batman, and the Metal is Nth Metal and Hawkman. That's pretty much what I know about it. And there are lots of multidimensional Batman things happening.
Yeah, there's multidimensional Batmans, and that's what we're getting the Terrifics out of.
Right,
so,
and various
cool.
other of those books, yes.
Cool.
Now, how about Doomsday
cool.
Clock?
Dig it. Doomsday Clock, I am legit interested in. We talked about this back when we did our Watchmen episode, mm-hmm. part of our push to actually do that episode, you know, instead of just get it off of our to-do list, was because Doomsday Clock was going to be starting up in a couple mm-hmm. of months.
And the Watchmeniverse was going to bleed in to some extent.
To the mainstream. And unlike some people, we were both intrigued.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, not horrified by the concept. I love the covers for Doomsday Clock.
They are
all really, really good.
Yep.
and they're all holofoil, and they're all expensive, and I kind of want to buy them.
Now, RLCS has the new books in the back against the wall for the most part, with one, you know, sort of standing rack towards the front. That is almost always Doomsday Clock, is what, I mean, that is the first things you see. I think that's simply because the covers are so cool.
They're amazing. My favorite one, I think, mm-hmm. was issue, it might actually be issue 4, but I think it was issue 3, was a Rorschach holofoil, mm-hmm. where as you tilted it, the blobs turned into the Trinity symbols, mm-hmm. and then back into blobs. That was really cool. I'm definitely going to read it. I probably actually won't buy the trade. I will probably wait for the individual issues to go on sale, and I mm-hmm. will buy the individual issues solely for the covers.
Nice. Now, one of the things that I'm going to harp on as we talk through these bestsellers is the prices of the comics.
Mm-hmm.
The high price is not affecting the top two books, interestingly enough. Both are $4.99 books, where the standard is $3.99. For both DC and Marvel, we'll see a few prices above that and even a few prices below that. But interesting that $4.99 price does not seem to be scaring people away from those two books.
I think that if you were bought into either of those concepts,
you were in.
You were in.
In terms of Rebirth finally getting to, or in terms of DC finally getting to this part of the story, what, a couple years in to Rebirth now?
Yeah, about 2 years then.
I think it maybe has taken a little too long. I would like them to have tied things together. They teased it in the Rebirth mm-hmm. story. They had the button crossover with Flash and Batman. As maybe I wish they'd gotten to this a little bit sooner to sort of make these connections, to make these, you know,
it
connections
would have been
and
nice
transitions.
If this was last summer, mm-hmm. and then this summer we would finally get Legion. I'm still looking at you. Still looking at you, DC Comics. Where is Saturn Girl? Give us the truth.
On the Supergirl TV show? That doesn't count, though.
It doesn't.
Doesn't count. So after our two DCs, the next two books on the top list are Marvel's Amazing Spider-Man 797. Huh. A major book getting very close to a major milestone.
Huh. Maybe trying to find that legacy numbering. Ooh. Try and pump up some interest. Interesting. Interesting.
And taking the opposite tack, Weapon H, number one. I believe that is literally Marvel's highest number, and obviously the lowest number you can go with. I believe Weapon H is a mutant combo something of Wolverine and Hulk.
A Hulk with Wolverine claws. I don't know. I don't care. It's dumb. I thought Dark Knight Metal was dumb. At least there's a good concept there.
Hulkverine, not
Hulkverine.
Hulkverine
does not work for me.
Then we get a couple more Batman titles. The Batman title, Batman 42, and then a few spots below that, Batman 43. So if you ever wondered what the benefit of double shipping your popular books was, here's Exhibit A and I guess Exhibit B.
Yeah, these are part of those books that are at the $2.99 mm-hmm. price range, which is, again, smart because
you can ship two
and you make $6
mm-hmm.
or you could ship one and make $4. Not a bad business plan, and it seems to be working pretty well. Also, it's Batman. So as evidenced by the $5 cover price of Dark Knight's Metal number 6, you can sort of play the odds either way. Mm-hmm. Batman is always going to be a winner.
Yeah. We've got The Mighty Thor coming in at number 6. Issue 705, and there was some weirdness about the numbering, but this is another one of that Marvel Legacy based on some interesting
calculations.
I believe if you look at the comic book DB for this title, it goes from 1 through 23 and then 700. I do want to issue a call to our Marvel zombies,
mm-hmm.
to our friends who are currently collecting either Spider-Man or Thor, these books that have gotten the legacy renumbering. And as we talked about earlier in the episode, I want to know how you're filing these. I really want to know how you're filing these. Now, Action and Detective did this, but they skipped 52 numbers when they did the new 52. That's an easy fix. You can just drop those ones right in there if you want to. It gets a little more complicated with some of the Marvel characters in terms of how exactly they're counting.
Yeah, miniseries and reboots and...
I'm curious how Marvel fans are handling this version of the renumbering. And did you reorder your books based on, or are you, do you just not care? Have you, has it changed your behavior in any way other than
gray hairs,
rolling your eyes? We get another number one here at number seven, Infinity Countdown. Starting to realize that Infinity is to Marvel what Crisis is to DC.
Yeah.
It is the title to put in front of
anything.
Anything, especially with a movie with the same word in it. But I think that this is vaguely related. It's looks to be a space opera sci-fi type of story with a lot of the Guardians characters. And a lot of those characters. I think that is what it's trying to tap into. We finally, at number nine, get a non-DC, non-Marvel book. We get the other part of the big three, Marvel, DC, and Kirkman.
Yep.
I mean, Image. Well, Kirkman.
Kirkman. Oblivion Song by Kirkman and DeFelici.
This is a number one.
And it has Kirkman in the title.
And just two spots down, we have Walking Dead.
So, there you go.
So... almost as much Kirkman at the top of the charts as there is Batman. Because if we didn't mention Batman, White Knight, number six, is at number 10. And we do have to point out, four of the top 10 best-selling comics this month are Batman books.
I mean...
that's actually pretty amazing.
And then
I mean, you can say positive or negative about it, but it's there.
And then one of them is Doomsday Clock.
Exactly.
So, like, Batman's in that, too.
It's like, you know, if you're complaining about why DC puts Batman first in everything, this is why.
The numbers speak for themselves.
It is selling. It is selling. Then just sort of as we get outside of the top 10, I just sort of wanted to mention just things that jumped out at me or things that jump out at you. But in this next batch, we get three Star Wars books. At 14, 17, and 18. Two issues of the main Star Wars series, the ongoing, and then one in the Darth Vader series. So, and of course, these are Marvel books now.
Yep.
And they've certainly, from what I can tell, between the Star Wars and the Vader, especially the Vader Down miniseries, the Dr. Aphra series, they're getting pretty popular.
A big number for number 12. Is Daredevil 600 from Marvel. Mm-hmm. It's $5.99, so I'm assuming a big 80-page giant or something to that general nature. And just anytime my boy shows up on a list, I want to take note. Then, of course, you've got Action, Detective, and Detective.
Right, two more Batman books there, 20 and 21. We don't want to blow past that Action, because this is Action 999. That is here in 19th place. And obviously the big blowout coming for issue 1000 next month. When you and I went to the store in our most recent venture together, we emptied out the box, which included the issue 1000 that I had purchased of Action, which was the Dave Gibbons cover. It's the 50s cover. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And you, wandering around the back of the store... decided that you needed one for yourself.
Well, they'd already sold out of the 70s cover, unfortunately, and the 40s cover, mm-hmm. which I was rather interested in the 40s cover. It was pretty, it was a cool look. The 70s one, I sort of wanted just to say it was from the 70s.
True.
But I was not actually a big fan of the cover itself. Mm. I picked up the 90s version.
The Dan Jurgens.
Which was Dan Jurgens, mm-hmm. and it's beautiful. Have not yet read the issue. But I'm looking forward to sitting down with a cup of tea and reading Action 1000 probably this weekend.
I'm about halfway through it, and it's pretty good so far. I've got to say, pretty good. Different type, you know, it's in anthologies you're getting just in the three or four stories I've read, different vibes, different types of stories, different narrative techniques. And that's all that is the sort of stuff that I like in anthology books. That it's not 80 pages of the same type of story being told over. It's different narrative, different art. So I'm enjoying it so far. I mentioned this fact that I had picked up the 50s cover and you'd picked up the 90s cover, and that prompted Clinton Robison to pat himself on the back because he picked up the 90s cover.
Yes.
And it was something about anytime I agree with M, I'm pretty sure I'm on the right track. What's the
aw, thank the, you, Clinton.
The gist of the twitversation that he and I had.
Aw.
That was affirmation for him. Again, back on Action 1000, though. Obviously, it's going to be the big selling book. And the test, to me, is here in 3 or 4 or 5 months. Because right here we have Action Comics and the two Detective Comics issues basically at the same spot.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if in 4 or 5 months when we're looking at Action 1003, 1004...
And also the name boost of Bendis and
exactly.
how much that affects its standards.
Yeah, how much that separation, how much Action is going to maybe separate itself, I assume, move up the chart somewhat compared to Detective. That's obviously the comparison.
Yeah, but see if it can break the top 10.
As an ongoing concern, that'll be interesting to see how long the boost lasts.
There's also here in the 20s and 30s, Avengers. Justice League and Justice League.
They're doing the Avengers. That's it looks like it is a weekly. Looks like that's at least temporarily coming out weekly. But hey, they've got a movie coming out, so you never know. I did not realize that Flash was doing this well.
Yeah.
You know, it's sitting here. It's a double shipper, and it's here in the mid-20s. That was surprising to see of the DC books. That it's actually ahead of Superman, ahead of Justice League. That surprised me. I haven't heard much about Rebirth Flash.
Yeah, probably still numbers boost from the button.
Yeah, could be.
Down in the mid-30s now, more Star Wars, but also Mr. Miracle.
I've heard great things about the Mr. Miracle book. And it's one of those ones that, sort of by the time I was hearing good things about it, the first couple issues were out.
Mm-hmm.
But it, to me, is a very interesting, definitely on the trade waiting / hoopla list.
For sure.
I think Tom King is doing some bang-up work on that, from what I hear. Did want to jump up to number 26, Saga, the highest-selling Image book that doesn't have Kirkman in it.
Yes.
Which should be a category
it
unto
really should
itself.
Be. Yeah, it should be. But there is Kirkman and non-Kirkman Image.
Now, to me, this is a case, I think The Walking Dead is as well, of the single-issue sales being a little deceptive.
Yes.
I think both of those books, both The Walking Dead and Saga, are hugely trade-purchased.
Oh, yeah.
And I imagine you see both of those circulate at the library, or you see them not circulate because they never hit the shelves?
Right now it's mostly Saga and Wicked Divine.
Are the ones that are...
Mm-hmm. Because as Walking Dead is sort of...
It's just
slowing down a mm-hmm. little bit, that especially the earlier volumes are not circulating
right.
as much because pretty much everyone is caught up on it by this
there
point.
There you go.
Everyone's just waiting for the new volume.
But I do think people are still discovering Saga, even though
yes.
this is issue 50 here. So that would be 8 or 9. I don't know how many they put in a trade, but 8 or 9 trades worth.
Yeah, I
think it's still selling. Then as we scroll down, we finally get to a book that we are actually reading.
Hurrah! Hurrah and huzzah,
coming
Wonder Woman.
In at number 39 and 41, the double shippedness that is Wonder Woman. Now, I didn't think about this the first time through. I do want to scroll back through. I think in terms of at least a lead named character, those are the highest two female-led books, sitting there at 39 and 40, whatever they were, the Wonder Woman books. Thor, you could argue.
Yeah, it's a co-lead book with Odinson and Jane, but
Saga, you know, has strong female characters as well. You could maybe argue that would qualify, but in terms of a named lead character, solo, I think probably Wonder Woman might be where we'd land. And finally, like you said, ones that we're reading.
Exactly. Here we are in the low 30s.
I mean, to be fair, we said we are interested in some of the other ones.
Yeah.
We'll get to them eventually.
Yeah.
Just not on the old pull list currently.
Again, this is why Diamond Distribution does not ask for our opinions.
Yeah.
Terrifics sounds so dumb and petty and wonderful. I actually quite want to read this one.
To me, it sounds fantastic. But that is one of the ones that has spun out of the Dark Knights event. I understand Plastic Man. I know, I'm surprised too. Plastic Man taking a major role in that event. We get Iron Man 598, so another big number approaching. Just again to mention the power of Batman, the number 53 selling comic. Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, number 5. So you have to imagine 1 through 4 actually sold higher than this. But still, number 5 coming in at number 53, one step ahead of Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man 301. Batman and the Turtles.
Volume 2.
The Power of the Bat. Then we do start to get some more female-led comics here. In the mid-50s, we've got Supergirl, a couple Harley Quinns, Dr. Aphra. Do have to mention Supergirl. Hi, Dr. Ange. Sorry, it's getting canceled.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that in a minute or two.
We've got some more number ones. Damnation Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider. All right. Marvel 2-in-1, trying to bring back Ben and Johnny into the public consciousness. Something that I love, which is the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers comic. I've not read it, but I just love that it exists. I don't think about how big of a Rangers fan I am very often, but every time that I see them in the public consciousness, I do smile.
But whenever you do think about it, you're ashamed.
Not at all.
All right. Live it. Live it.
I live my truth.
Now, we did pass over another one that we're purchasing and another one that's being canceled. Super Sons, sitting there at number 65. Why would they cancel this and Supergirl?
We'll talk about that
in a second. We got some Nightwing coming in here in the mid-70s.
Doctor Strange getting that little movie boost.
Batgirl and the Birds of Prey at number 80. I think that one's being canceled as well. And that's one that was never on the pull list, but I really like it. I've read the couple of trades and I've really liked it. Then we start to hit where our books are.
Yeah.
Here in the 80s and 90s. We dominate this section of the charts. Green Lanterns coming in at 82 and 85. Trinity at 95 and 96. And Green Arrow at 99. We've got like a third of the books in that mid-80s to 200. I think that's a problem. Trinity, another one that's being canceled. And I don't think it's official, but I think everyone understands Supergirl, Super Sons, Trinity. This is all making way for Bendis.
Yeah, this is clearing the deck so that Bendis can come in. And as some people have theorized, these are all still in the top 100. Trinity is a well-regarded book, even if the sales numbers aren't great. Super Sons and Super Girls are both solidly adequate, you know, decent-selling, serviceable books. Yeah,
those two in particular, the sales levels are high enough for them not to be canceled.
Exactly.
Especially Super Sons and especially Supergirl.
So it is possible, I won't say likely, because I don't want to get anyone's hopes up, but possible that once Bendis has come in, gotten his feet, sort of set the set the stage for what he's going to be doing on the main books, that then some of these books might come back. Yeah. That we will probably get a Supergirl. It is unthinkable that with a Supergirl TV show and with Superman hopefully getting a good bump from both the big numbers and from Bendis's name power, that there would not be a Supergirl book. Like, that is ridiculous. So Supergirl in likelihood coming back.
Is that Anne's cheering that we hear?
Oh yeah.
I think that is.
I can hear it. Yeah.
Supergirl's the most obvious one. To come back. Both
Super Super Sons will be coming back. Hopefully Trinity will be coming back. Mm-hmm. But we're not holding our breath, but we are enjoying what we have thus far.
I really liked I think the opening arc of Trinity was terrific.
Fantastic.
That was
the best.
Sort of a man who has everything take.
Mm-hmm.
Thought that was terrific. I really love Super Sons.
It's really fun.
It's just fun comics. What I like about both those and but Super Sons and Trinity is just the relationships.
Mm-hmm. They're whether so strong.
Whether it's parent-child relationship, it's Lois and Clark, it's Diana and Bruce and Clark, and any of those combinations. And I have to shout out that this final arc of Trinity also brought in Warlord and Skitaris. So, as far as I'm concerned, Trinity is ending on a high note. And Green Arrow at 99. I've enjoyed this. It's been on our pull list from the start. I'm canceling it at 40.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed it. It's meandered a bit in the last 10 issues or so.
And with all of these books that we have been following for years now, This is a surreal experience for both of us. Books that we have been following being canceled, like what? But now that Trinity and Super Sons are both going to be canceled, it's kind of a chance for us to reevaluate what we have been getting for years now. And try and sort of, we were getting Bombshells until the original Bombshells wrapped up, and we have not been getting the new Bombshells United. So it's sort of a chance to take a step back and see, okay, well, what's being published now? Maybe picking up Mr. Miracle or Terrifics might become a possibility.
The way it works at our LCS is that if you have 5 books on the pull list, you get a discount. So basically, it's buy 4 books on the pull list, get the 5th free. Is another way for that. I mean, assuming all the, you know,
provided the prices
and all that, but that for practical purposes, that's a way to think about it. And I think with getting rid of Green Arrow and Super Sons and Trinity ending, I think that takes us to 3. Wonder Woman.
Green Lanterns.
And Hellblazer. Huh, we haven't mentioned him yet. We're at 100 on the sales charts. Anyway, John counts the time. Anyway. Again, we're at a point where we think about, do we want to add a couple of books? And I'll talk about a little bit of strategy that I've been working on just in the back of my head to do that in a little bit.
Now that we have left the 100s, we're talking about things that are in the 20,000 or less.
Yeah, in terms of the copies being sold.
And this is where you get some weird stuff. There's some cool stuff. Harley and Ivy meet Betty and Veronica. Sure. You get some TV tie-in things. Rick and Morty. There's a Neil Gaiman American Gods adaptation that's in here. There's a few things of that nature. And then there's things like Vampironica. Iron Man, Hong Kong Heroes.
I'm not sure, I mean, I know what those words are. Never heard them put in that
don't
exact
know what
combination.
It means, unit.
108, I did want to mention Mira, Queen of Atlantis.
Yes.
That's one. This is issue number 2. We picked up issue number 1. Your roomie picked it up when we went to the big anniversary sale at the LCS. This is going to come out after Free Comic Book Day, but we're recording it before. But, you know, the store does have buy 2 new books, get a 3rd free. So I don't know if Mira 2...
Doomsday Clock. What? What?
Oh, or Mira 2 and 3 and something might be on the roommates list as well.
Possibly.
Anyway, just throwing that out to you.
Red Hood and the Outlaws. Mm-hmm. Still hanging on. Still hanging on. My personal white whale.
Interesting that things like, this is where we're finding it in the 120s in terms of the rankings, where we're finding a Jessica Jones, yeah. Rise of Black Panther, things
Batman
like
Beyond.
That, which is interesting. Yeah.
I Hate Fairyland, which we actually both enjoy. That was a free comic book day giveaway one year.
That's right.
Monstrous, which is a very, very good series, but again, it's mostly a trade waiter, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
A whole series of True Believers tie-ins.
Yeah, I think those are like $1 specials that
yeah,
Marvel put out. So
most of them are about Venom, so right. Again, movie tie-ins.
Right. Now here we're in the 140s and 150s in terms of the rankings. We're
still
getting
to John Constantine.
We're getting to books selling around 14, 15,000. And I did want to mention a couple here. One is what I think was the highest ranking young animal book, Mother Panic, coming in at 143rd on the list. Now, Doom Patrol would be higher, I'm sure, but that comic hardly ever releases a new issue.
Yeah.
I do like that the young animal books, I think after the first two trades, after 12 issues, there was a big crossover and they've rebranded with new number ones. So this is Mother Panic, Gotham AD, number one. Mm-hmm. Also, here's where we find some of my favorites, like She-Hulk is down this low.
Deadman.
And this one hurts, Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
145. Now, it's issue 28, but this is of the second volume. So it's basically about issue 45 or 50, since when Kamala debuted. And I assume, with fingers crossed, that that's a popular trade book as well.
That's hopefully.
That, and that's what is keeping it around. But that's sad to see some of these single issue books that we really like down this far on the list.
And speaking of which.
Wait. Let me keep scrolling.
Okay.
Scrolling. Shade the Changing Woman.
Another
TMNT.
Kirkman's Outcast.
That's from last month's issue, actually.
Oh.
And that's still outselling. Hey, there it is.
There he is.
157th on the list. Hellblazer number 20. I have heard nothing about it being canceled, though. I know. I don't know why either.
I'm watching you. I'm watching you, DC.
I'm not sure why either. But the last one of ours that are here. So I did want to just to summarize our purchases.
Mm-hmm.
We've got currently 6 titles, but it's 9 issues a month.
Mm-hmm.
I did double check at the LCS. It's 5 titles.
Yeah.
Double shipping doesn't
count.
Oh, man. To get the discount. But we had Wonder Woman coming in at number 39 and 41. So we had nothing in the top 35.
No.
So we have the number 39 and number 41 book. Nothing else in the top 50. We get the Super Sons at 65. Nothing else in the top 80. Then we get our jam.
Green Lanterns at 82, 85. Trinity at 96, 99. Green Arrow.
And then oh, wow. The triple digits. I mean, the low triple digits.
Still above Scooby Apocalypse.
Think positive.
Still above Wicked Divine. Still above Cave Carson Has an Interstellar Eye, which is a number one for the new series, and you might actually be kind of interested in.
I liked Cave Carson Has a Cybernetic Eye. I like that. So, I mean, it does tell you a little bit about where the young animals fit in.
Mm-hmm.
They're fitting in rebooted number ones in the John Constantine Scooby Apocalypse area in terms of DC sales. So
yeah,
tricky.
Doing good work, but not great on the charts.
We scroll down a little bit further. We're getting very low.
And this is where you get into a lot of the tie-in comics. Mm-hmm. So Injustice 2, the new Bombshells Uniteds, things of that nature.
How was Unbeatable Squirrel Girl only 183rd? Another heartbreaker.
This was my shocker. How is Unbeatable Squirrel Girl all the way down here with John Constantine? Like, that's a crime.
First of all, try not to ever use those two in the same sentence again.
Ever again.
Please.
And it breaks my heart, but if my favorite trash can is your goal and you have not reached it, that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff down here, things that I mostly know from trades, Deadly Class and Descender and things of that nature.
I mean, I think, you know, we're getting to the point now we are moving mostly out of the DCs and Marvels into the
Image
into
and
the
Oni,
Boom, you know, the Booms and the IDWs Valiant. And all that. We got our Valiant first Valiant here at 195.
Ninjak
or Ninja K.
And then Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands. Another tie-in.
I guess they haven't pushed it. But another TV tie-in. And this is then where we're getting into your Witchblades and Gotham City Garages. I mean, you're talking pretty obscure stuff.
Marvel Preludes.
Yes.
Yeah, things of that nature. Gotham City Garage, statuary tie-ins.
Right. I liked Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
I
know. It's at 220. I read the first trade. It was really good.
Yeah.
But yes, like you said, now we're getting, you get down this far. I mean, we're talking books selling 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 copies. These ones would never survive the mainstream DC.
Culling.
Yeah, exactly.
not at all. there is some, you know, funny stuff down here. You know, your DuckTales, your various Star Treks, Archies and Xenas and Kiss Army of Darkness. But mostly it's just gotten...
Scooby-Doo team-up. Barely selling at all. But I do wonder if some of these, again, sort of the younger kids' books, I do wonder, I mean, on things like that, you know, the trade is what's pulling.
Yeah.
Is what's pulling the wagon, either through Barnes & Noble or through libraries and Scholastic and that sort of thing.
A lot of it is tie-in.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you know, provided that the issue, it's, what is it, Loss Leading?
Right,
the Loss Leader. On all these issues, because as long as they keep the Scooby-Doo team-up property, that gives them the ability to one day make animated movies. I actually saw one. The first DC Scooby-Doo team-up movie has been released, and we bought it for the library.
Right.
Pumpkinhead. What year are we living in that the Pumpkinhead comic is back? I am personally offended on this behalf.
And again, what, you know, once you get down in the past 250 to 300, you're getting books from the month before that are still selling. And that's why you get some weird things here. But I did want to do a shout out down here in the 300s, which is where we're finding some of the Doctor Who books from Titan. Again, I'm guessing those are trade dominant through the trade, or even since they're British, it's possible they're using another distributor other than Diamond. I may do wonder that side of the business, how that works. And I did want to give a shout out to, I think it was number 393, Quarry's War, which is by Max Allen Collins. It was a novel series. I think it was actually a one season TV show about a hitman named Quarry, and he's taken some of his books and turned them into comic books, although they are not exactly burning up the sales charts, as we say. And I'm part of the problem. I'm reading the single issues on Hoopla through the library on my free. I feel bad about that. I think there's something fitting about sort of wrapping up this discussion with the admission that I'm a fan of the number 393 ranked comic book for last month. I think that's sort of fitting.
Yeah, because I think that just pretty much puts a nice little bow
on just how out of touch we are.
Yeah. I was honestly surprised by this because I figured it was going to be all tie-ins. And most of the tie-ins were really, really low down this list. Things like Black Lightning, Cold Dead Hands. Again, I was not particularly interested in it, but it's a TV tie-in. Of course it's going to be selling well. Or even the Star Treks or Power Rangers, for goodness sakes. I was actually expecting a lot of those to be a lot higher up the charts than they actually were. I was kind of surprised, actually, by how much Star Wars
had kind of taken over
the upper sections of the charts, and how much of it I shouldn't be surprised, but how much of it was renumbered? The legacy renumbered, either super high and super low. The, legacy renumbered with 500 plus, or the brand new rebranding with number one or number two.
And not to be cynical, but very few of those Marvel renumberings ended up with books numbered like 620 or 531. They happened to land right around the high 90s of things.
590, 690, 693,
so you could get to the big coincidence.
I think not.
I didn't want to focus a lot on trade paperbacks here. They do include trade paperback information, and it's very interesting because 6 of the top 10 trades are Image.
Yep.
And I think...
sounds about right.
Again, not coincidence, an Image purchaser, and these might not be going to your comic shops.
Right. These are the ones that are probably may be going to your library.
Your library. I do not know the bookstore distribution enough. I don't know if Diamond sells to bookstores, to libraries, or if that's done separately. So again, where the numbers come from, but it's Walking Dead, it's Black Science, it's the end, the Invincible, the last trade of Invincible, Saga, of course, there, mm-hmm. and then it's some of the DC. Then it's done with some of the DC trades. It's interesting that Marvel only has one in the top 15, Black Panther at 14. I wonder if, since trades are books that were from 6 to 7 months ago, if Marvel Unlimited is cutting into the trade, the physical trade purchases for Marvel fans. Because you can have the same experience, that is the delay, and keep up on Unlimited. I wonder if that's where, from a business perspective, if that's where Marvel Unlimited is cutting in. Just a theory.
Just a theory. I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised. Super Sons Volume 2. Number 4.
I know. There's no good reason to cover it. And again, a Flash.
Yeah.
Is sitting there at number 3. I think Flash is much more popular than I expected, I have to admit, in terms of DCs. As you scroll down, then you get lots of X-Men.
Yep.
Trades, but they're much further down the list from the Sagas and the Walking Deads and the
Black
Green
Science,
Lantern
Invincible.
Earth Ones, and then either the out-of-continuity DC, like the Earth One, or the Image books. Personally think that the trade market and the paper market and the digital market may be three completely different groups of people.
I mean, we certainly seem to be.
And there may be some cannibalization there, mm-hmm. but I'm curious how all of that shakes out down
the
road.
Because as far as we're concerned, we tend to get the things we love in the floppy copies.
Right.
I love John Constantine, and as long as there is a John Constantine independent
right.
single issue that is being sold by DC or Vertigo Comics, I will buy it.
Mm-hmm.
That is just how it is. Wonder Woman, same thing. Green Lanterns, I love it. I love the concept. I love the story. I love the writers. I love the art. So I'm going to be buying it. Things that we're interested in, we get through the digital.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I've read Descender and Unbeatable Squirrel Girl,
right.
things like that. That's where you get all of your Archie fix,
yep.
because you're not going to buy the issues.
Right.
You're not bought into the fandom enough to
right.
purchase the individual issues as they come out. And also there's a billion.
And there are a billion of them on Hoopla, the free digital app that runs through your public library.
And then the important stuff.
Yes.
Is the stuff that we buy
right.
in trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I have Injustice Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way that I was ever right. going to buy the individual issues. There was really even no way that I was going to take the time to read them on my digital book. But it's a big, important thing, and I want to have it.
Right.
So I'm going to buy it, but I'm going to wait for the trade.
I did want to tie in one other thing here, and it sort of relates to, again, where we are in our purchasing. And that's that I took this top 300 list, and there's a way to sort it by cover price.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Image and the Marvel books, there were some promotional $1 books, but
I mean
those don't count. And in terms of ongoing books, the only publisher I saw that had anything for under $2.95 was Alterna, and they are way under that at $1.50. And part of their business model is super cheap comics on super cheap paper.
Try and kind of go back to the 60s and 70s back model.
That old school.
Pick it up and toss it when you're done. Or in your case, leave it in a children's waiting room.
And that's one I did add an Alterna 2-issue miniseries to our pull list. I just sort of wanted to test it to see if that's a way to go. And I think they tend to run miniseries, 2, 4, 6-issue, that sort of thing. And I may try to at least fill out it if we're ever sitting at 4 books, something like that. Maybe that's a way to fill out our 5-book requirement.
Yeah, exactly.
But I did want to try with a 2-issue series just to see what the reading experience is. And compared to a $3 or $4 book, reading this $1.50 book, is it half as good? If it's 3/4 as good,
that's a genuine quarter bin steal.
At what point does it? I feel it's my responsibility to investigate the cheapest new comic books available for our listeners.
So tune in 3 months from now.
And I will report back.
Our hard-hitting expose on Alterna comics and inexpensive distributing methods as a way to get stories into people's hands.
And of course, we would love to hear from you about the current comics you're buying.
Your thoughts on the state of modern comics market. whatever other things that we mentioned that you want to take us to task for. If you want to comment on my love of the Power Rangers, come at me, bro.
I am curious as to the mix, the spending your money on old comics versus new comics. So that's the first place. Mm-hmm. And of course, my trick at our LCS is almost every time I empty out our box, I make sure I pull a couple of quarter books. At least it lowers the average cost.
Yeah, it lowers the per diem. And also, they like you because you don't come in and buy an entire box for, $4.50.
Exactly. I'm selective. There's some books not worth a quarter.
There are some books that we find in the quarter bin that are Poe Dameron issue number 9 that just doesn't have any staples in it.
That's what I love about our LCS. They received the book. It had no staples. So what, a $3.99 book, brand new, 25 cents. I respect that. Did you pick that one up?
Yes, I did.
I thought so.
I have it in a bag because it is currently unreadable.
There is that minor technicality. Minor technicality.
But I have it.
But we're curious what you are spending your money on, first of all, old versus new versus unlimited versus digitals, and then how and what you're reading.
So whatever comments that you have for us can be sent to relativelygeeky@gmail.com or can be posted on the episode posting for this blog at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
If you'd like to leave... And whatever it is, Apple Music, podcast, iTunes. Like to leave an iTunes review, like our friends from earlier in the episode did, you're welcome to do that as well. I think the important thing to keep in mind here is that when it comes to comic book bestseller lists or really any topic in comics, let's be honest, any topic at all, we are not experts.
And we are really not experts about this. But we are family.
That is a new podcast by one of the Satellite Sisters. So it's totally nothing to do with anything. It's actually about giving work advice.
But it's the Satellite Sisters. That's perfect. And it's going in our business episode. Like, hey, you think that this...
Boom.
Do you think that us talking about the diamond distribution statistical numbers is going to be boring? Well, don't worry. First, you get to listen to a podcast promo about work advice.
You got to feel sorry for our listeners because by the time this comes out, it'll still be, maybe 3 weeks back, but... They had to listen to me talk about tax policy in the context of a Flash comic. Michael Bailey said he enjoyed it, but he's a nice Southern gentleman, so what else was he going to say?
It's a good thing they love us.
Or if you'd like to leave a iTunes review, like our friends... Who's the first guy? Gorilla...
Something.
Gorilla...
Gorilla Grodd.
No.
Kimmy and Michael Bailey.
subtitle to the episode?
Go for it.